This is Rebecca Lowe, or Rebecca Lua, if you listen to Suboptimal Radio, and you are listening to Men in Blazers on the NBC Sports Network.
It's unbelievable!
From the Embassy Row studios in the crap part of Soho, and from... there isn't a crap part of Kiawah Island, South Carolina. Rog, it's beautiful here. It's the Men in Blazers podcast.
Very happy for you, Dave, that you're still vacationing. Yeah. It is 91 degrees here in New York City.
Yeah.
I've tucked away my seersucker because I'm a law-following, a law-abiding man. And I want my my application for citizenship to go through without a hitch. And I know that Loretta Lynch doesn't like it if you wear seersucker past the sell-by date. But I packed it away with tears in my eyes. It's that confusing time, Dave. Summer's kind of ended, but it's not quite fall. We're in that in between. I'm just wearing. It's a lederhosen is the short answer.
Well, I've got my Stan Smiths on, no socks, Rog. Got my shorts, a little t-shirt. All I need. I'm never coming home. I'm never coming back. This is it.
Oh, Dave, I need you back here. I'm feeling a bit low. I've got to say, this is the first summer that it hit me that I have a finite number of summers left on this planet.
This is the first year that it's occurred to you, that you are mortal.
And so I can universalise it and not make this about me, David.
Yeah.
So does everybody listening to this podcast.
Yeah, that's true.
I mean, when you're a kid, the seasons just seem to circle through infinitely.
Yeah.
It felt like I was eternally out in the streets kicking a football or playing cricket and tennis. And this is the summer I realised, Dave, I've got a precious number of summers still left to savour. Need to use them with meaning, not let them drift away.
It's so true. Although I would say, Rog, when you say you're a bit low, I take that as think, wow, Rog is in a pretty good mood today. That seems to me to be a considerable improvement on your usual mood. That's not bad. A bit low, we'll take that.
B minus. It's a great way to go through life. I'm not used to being so high, so hopped up.
Yeah. You know, Trev, my father, has believed for many years that he's immortal, that he's never going to die. He would refuse to contemplate even the possibility of his own death, there being a finite number of years left. And I was talking to him about this the other day, and I said, Dad, you know, don't worry about it. You're going to live forever or something. He said, no, I no longer believe I'm going to live forever, son. He said, because if I believe that I'm going to live forever, I have to believe that your mother's going to live forever also. You know, so at a certain point in your life, you want there to be a finite number of summers left, Rog.
We submit to reality for strange reasons sometimes, Englishman, yeah. Davo. But I feel an incredible amount of pressure now to make every moment of every summer count from here on out. which is why this weekend, Davo, I went to Allentown, mm-hmm. Pennsylvania for the first time.
I love Allentown, Pennsylvania. I went to school at Mercersburg with many people from Allentown, Pennsylvania.
Oh, what a place. I went to watch my older son play football in a tournament, met a glut of young GFOPs. But what a beautiful state Pennsylvania is. What a fascinating town Allentown is. Bethlehem Steel, symbol of another time, another America.
Yeah.
But I loved Allentown. And I've got to say, I'll go on record, I admire any city that loves Billy Joel so damn much they name a whole town after one of his songs. Given the choice there, if I was at that town council meeting and we were kind of trying to brand the town, I would have gone Captain Jack or She's Always a Woman. I'd love to live in She's Always a Woman.
As I talk to you, I look over one of the beautiful marshy vistas here in South Carolina. And Rog, I was talking to you about this on the phone. I just love a marshy vista. Some people love mountains. Some people love oceans. Some people like lakes. But I long every year when I leave this island, because I come here pretty much every year, I just long to return because I need another marshy vista.
What is it about marshy vistas that makes you love to ensconce yourself in their loving bosom?
They're calming, Rog. They're calming. They're full of nature. Nature. Wildlife. They change colours constantly. They appear quite dangerous. You might try and, like, run off towards the mountains. You'll run off into the sea. But, like, the marsh, it's sort of like, it's like life, Rog. It's both beautiful and terrifying all at the same time.
You've essentially just defined Stephen Naismith to me, or my understanding of Stephen Naismith. But when we had this conversation midweek, David, it set me off thinking, what do I like in life, David? Because you have, like, sea people who love the beach. Others swear by late life. I try to think. I mean, I love the New Jersey Shore. I really do. It's like traveling into the 1980s and everything that is gorgeous and technicolor about America. I do love a great lake, Lake Michigan, a lake that feels like a sea. But I realise, Davo, mostly, I like the inside.
What, the inside of America or the inside of your mind or the inside of home?
I like my couch. I like my television. I like my football on the aforementioned television.
No, you don't like international breaks.
That's when I'm truly... Oh, we'll talk about that. That's when I'm truly at peace, Davo. Incidentally, while we're talking about beach and lake and marshy vista, I just want to do an infomercial, the more you know spot, called suntan cream. I think sunscreen is what you call it in America, right?
Yeah.
I just had a bunch of precancerous crap scraped off my face, so don't be stupid like old Rog, especially you balds who are listening.
Yeah.
That is it.
And to be clear, it was not me scraping off that stuff. You actually went to a professional. I was willing to do it.
It was your receptionist. Just did it with a compass. It was painless. It was painless.
Yeah. Well, Rod, I'm happy you got that dealt with.
B minus, like mate. B minus.
The scar makes you look more manly.
These lederhosen, that's what makes me look more manly, mate.
Yeah, they do make you look manly. Talking of manly, Rod.
Yes.
What does a real man do November 13th, November 14th?
Oh, a real woman, too. A real woman, too.
A real bikehead, Rod, comes to BlazerCon.
We got a lot of letters, Davo, from a lot of GFOPs with a lot of ideas for programming BlazerCon. Huge number.
Yeah.
And we are in the midst of that aforementioned programming process. And we love each and every one of your ideas. Each one better than next. But we got a fantastic one, Davo.
From GFOP Jason Hudson. He writes, why not have a couple of barber chairs set up in the lobby of the Expo Center for anyone who wants to # embrace the bald? Or maybe they could get some orange highlights. # we stand with gingers. Perfect. Absolutely perfect.
And we, Jason, have acted. You command, we jump. You tell us how high. We've got barber's chairs. We got them thanks to Freeman Sporting Club, the Germans who are responsible for the tweed, for the seersucker, for the upcoming corduroy, which will come with the awakening of fall. Freeman's are going to send two barbers with barber's chairs to cut hair of GFOPs all conference long. I think they know more than just giving people the Rog and the Davo. You can come and get a Steve McLaren. I think that's probably their... who wouldn't want a Steve McLaren, Davo?
You know, that's what we should do. You know the way that you go to a barbershop and they have photos of all different hairstyles? We should have photos of all our favourite Premier League managers and players. And you could ask whatever you want. I want a callback. And we'll go full on.
I would admire greatly. And in fact, I'm going to get a special prize for the GFOP who comes to BlazerCon with a photograph of Slaven Bilic. And just calmly, like when I was a kid, I used to take a photo of Steve Austin, the $6 million man, the bionic man to my barbers. And I'd say to him, can you cut my hair like that? Go and get a Slaven Bilic. Go and get a Slaven Bilic on us at BlazerCon. We are immersed on building out the programme for BlazerCon, working on a couple of great panels right now. The first is a posse of rather remarkable MLS owners who are going to come in this year in which MLS turns 20 and discuss quite candidly their differing visions for MLS in 20 years' time, quite complexly different. I'm quite excited for that. And the second is we're going to be gathering a number of the US's leading youth development minds, the gurus who are trying to change the way young American talents are identified, scouted, and bred, coming together to talk about where the next Landon Donovan will come from. So I'm quite excited about those, Davo. You've also been working very hard on the US Women's National Team panel.
Yeah, bringing together various stars from the US Women's National Team to come and talk to BlazerCon, and working on some interesting people who want to moderate that panel also. Rog, all will be revealed over the next few weeks. Thank you to all the GFOPs who've stepped up hugely to go and support BlazerCon. Ticket sales have been brisk. There are still some left. Go to our website, meninblazers.com, for all of the details.
And there is a reduction for students and teachers and veterans.
And people currently serving in the military as well, Rog.
Courage.
Yeah, absolutely. Oh, another detail, Rog. This Sunday, you are debuting another film, Bournemouth, Together, Anything is Possible. You did not come up with that title because you just do not believe that anything is possible.
I was going to say, if only that was true, Dave, our life would be so different.
You did not come up with that title. Bournemouth, together, anything is possible, said not Rog. It debuts 2 p.m. Eastern Time Sunday as you travel to the south coast of England, where the sky's further from the ground, to delve into English football's greatest fairy tale. The Cherries, Rog.
Up the Cherries, Dave. What a story. We the Cherries, Dave. What a story. I gotta say, yeah. It is like Seabiscuit and cleats to me. It's a team that rose from the bottom of League Two. That is single A equivalency in, I guess, in the baseball pyramid. Recovered from bankruptcy. I mean, they were absolutely teetering to the extent that fans had to put out buckets to collect coins to keep the lights on at the club. And they went from there, Davo, within 6 years, three promotions into the Premier League with an 11,700-seater stadium. I love my time at the club. It is a special atmosphere, top to bottom. And Eddie Howe, who I interviewed at length for the film The Young Coach, he is a footballing genius with an intense humility and an emphasis on building a learning culture at the club. So I can't wait to hear what you think about it. All I can say, Davo, is up the Cherries. One sad note, I will say. I spent some time while I was there with the club's record signing. Defender Tyrone Mings, who came from Ipswich, JW is nodding in pain. Last week, he made his debut and lasted 6 minutes before being injured. He's out for the season now with a knee injury. And he's a remarkable bloke. He really is a remarkable human being who spends a huge amount of time working in homeless shelters, giving away his tickets to unemployed fans, and genuinely been quite an inspirational new strain of English footballing superstar. And he tweeted out after his injury a poem from Chris Butler that read, "Mirror, mirror on the wall, I'll always get up after I fall, and whether I run, walk or have to crawl, I'll set my goals and achieve them all." Tyrone, you are in our thoughts. We wish you a speedy recovery. Quick tweet from @randomwalk76. "Hey, Rog Bennett, #CurseOfRog, have you considered a documentary about the Mexican national team? If so, could you do one quickly? I'm on it. I'll work on it, America."
Before October. Godspeed, Tyrone. Okay, Rog, we've got a packed show. We tried desperately not to read too much into the USA's 4-1 loss to Brazil and look ahead to October's Confederations Cup playoff against the aforementioned Mexico. We discuss Wayne Rooney usurping Sir Bobby Charlton as England's comb-over king. Oh, and the all-time leading goalscorer. We'll preview this weekend's Premier League fixtures. We'll dissect Didier Drogba's first MLS hat-trick and announce a contest to give away EA Sports FIFA 16 limited edition Men in Blazers packs. Okay, Rog, to the football. Crack open a Guinness.
Cheers, Davo. And Tyler Sash, RIP.
Cheers, Rog. Okay, we've survived the first international break of the season, barely. And despite our best intentions to tidy up the house, spend time with our loved ones, and step out for a jog, we couldn't resist the allure of settling in with a Guinness and watching the glamour tie between Malta and Azerbaijan.
Oh, Davo, the first international break of the season. I've got to say, it must go down as one of the longest weekends of the year. I remember when I was a kid in England in the summer and you get sent to bed and it was still light outside and they felt like the longest nights ever because you just couldn't go to sleep while there was still sunlight pouring through your shades. It's what this weekend felt like to me, that same emotion. It just felt absolutely endless. I should say the highlight of my footballing week, it happened off the field, watching football clubs' response to the refugee tragedy unfolding before our eyes and on social media across Europe, seeing Bayern Munich lead the way and give over $1 million to charities. The whole of German football, it should be said, has been astonishing with their fan shows of support at games and their refugee welcome banners, which brought a tear to this Jewish bloke's eyes. Real Madrid donated over $1 million. Roma and the American owner Jim Palotta pledged nearly $700,000, and Arsenal, Everton and West Brom led the way in England. Football, Davo, it can be fantastic.
It can be. We should say the whole nation of Germany and Angela Merkel, Rogers, really led the way, setting an example for the rest of Europe in how to deal with this crisis. Okay, Rod, I hate to segue out of crisis, but we've got to start with the US men's national team.
Talking about Germans in crisis.
They suffer a 4-1 battering at the hands of Brazil last night in Foxborough, Massachusetts. A game every bit as brutal as the scoreline sounds. In fact, I think the scoreline was almost a little flattering to the US. That result comes after the Von Trapps came back from a goal down to beat Peru 2-1 in Washington, D.C. Friday, courtesy of a, come on, Josie, out-of-door brace. Coming up next for the U.S., a high-stakes matchup with Mexico at the Rose Bowl October 10th. The winner earns a slot in the 2017 Confederations Cup in Russia. Before plumbing through the wreckage and destruction left all over the field at Foxborough last night, Rog, let's cast our mind back to Friday in the nation's capital.
Oh, feels so long ago, Dave. I hope we're still alive. And my first match note in that game was, wow, Jurgen got some sun this summer. Either that or he's been on the Warren Barton sunbed regiment. I don't know how you say speedos in German, Davo, but
Speedos!
It was an odd game. It was a lineup that was almost significant by who wasn't there as who was.
Yeah.
There was no Clint, no Michael Bradley. Josie was captain alongside a lean, mean Bobby Wood. Tim Howard on the bench, which is so Jurgen, making a statement that whoever you are, you don't just drop back into the team you want. If you take a break, he will punish you. And then the second thing I noticed, got to talk about it, the Peru jersey, Davo. One of my favourites in world football. I think it harkens back to the 1978 World Cup, which is the first one I was cognizant of as a kid, when the host Argentina had to beat Peru by 4 goals to progress and eliminate Brazil. And the Peruvian goalkeeper, Ramon Quiroga, who actually turned out to be an Argentine-born Peruvian goalkeeper, who was nicknamed El Loco, which is always a bit of a clue. Be a good name for Joe Hart, actually, El Loco. But he kept running. He had this awesome habit of running out to the halfway line inexplicably to make tackles just during the run of play. It was very match-fixy. They ended up winning that game, I think 6-0 Argentina against their Argentine-born Peruvian goalkeeper. But that was where my love of the diagonal sash was born, Davo. I love a diagonal sash.
You do. You love a diagonal sash. You always have done.
I think when the Men in Blazers national team is forged, when we get a jersey, Davo, I've got a feeling that jersey may have a diagonal sash.
What positives did you take out of this US men's national team performance against Peru?
The result, which really, it was like a comb over on a bald man. I mean, it was an odd game. The US tried to trick down the flanks. Peru worked the ball through the middle. I mean, the seeds of the Brazil game were almost there in the Peru game. Peru had the guile and touch. They took a stranglehold on the game. US looked more like a rash of players trying to show their stuff rather than a unified collective. I mean, they were playing a middling team here, but a middling team who understood movement, ideas, cohesion. And the US really didn't. The biggest weak spot, again, was the defence. A goal courtesy of a deflected shot. Omar Gonzalez dithered, dropped back, and then charged forward as Daniel Chavez got his first goal off a wicked curve past the helpless Guzan, who did the whip, he did the nene, he did the Superman, all to no avail to get that ball out. And such is life as a QB controversy goalkeeper that a number of commentators debated whether poor Brad was at fault on the goal. I definitely think he wasn't. At halftime, the game was transformed. Jeff Cameron came on, good enough for sexy, sexy Stoke, good enough for the United States. Bedoya off, mixed Discarude on, and the US started the fight back.
Yeah, through Josie Altidore, Rog. At long last, Josie's back.
Yeah, Josie was back, but in a very, very Josie way. He drew a penalty. He was clipped in the box after a quarterback-style throw from Jeff Cameron. Josie made the penalty. Josie took the penalty. Josie missed the penalty. Josie then scooped in the rebound. Oh, that beard he's got. It gave me flashbacks to the movie Witness, which somehow has kind of been written out of movie history. I don't think that's fair. Well done, Josie, for bringing it back into public consciousness. The goal emboldened the US. Yedlin chased a ball that few could have caught. He cut back like a master. Playing alongside such world-class talent as Andros Townsend has clearly rubbed off on him. Then Josie whiffed in humiliating fashion, Davo. Zardes scuffed a shot that was blocked. And Josie, who just landed after air guitaring the first shot, was gifted a finish in front of an open goal from close range. Josie, right place, Josie, right time, declared the commentator, as if he hadn't just whiffed on the shot in the first place. It was amazing. It was the most inadvertent thing ever. It was possibly one of the most unimpressive double goal scoring feats of all time, Davey. Other than Arsenal's potent goal scorer own goal, I can't think of a more inadvertent goal machine than Josie. All I can say about Josie, the best thing I can say, he's minimised the time lag between dreadful Josie and cosmic Josie. He's kind of compressed that time.
So, you know, Zardes, Yedlin, a bit of speed on the flanks, looking quite good, but still those three central questions that we always have about the US men's national team. What's going on in central defence? Who's going to score the goals up front? Who are going to be the players who step up to replace Dempsey, Donovan, Bradley as being the leaders of this side? Not really answered against Peru.
Yeah, you can reduce them to one question, Dave, WTF. But this was the first time USA have ever beaten a common bowl team after trailing at halftime. One of our GFOPs at Rojaville 123 kind of summed up the victory, saying that was the men in blazers of crap wins. Hashtag suboptimal. But after last night, Dave, oh for a crap win. Oh for a crap win. Because Brazil was just another experience entirely.
Can we first of all say, though, about the Brazil game, that there are two significant elements that we've got to put out there before we even discuss this performance by the US. One, Brazil are playing very, very good football now. This is not the Brazil that took that seven-goal hammering at the hands of the Germans at the World Cup last year. Dunga has come and he's got this team playing very, very different football, very, very different approach. And secondly, it is actually rare that you come up against a team as good as Brazil, playing football as good as Brazil. The US, I think to some extent, have been a little bit fortunate in some of their friendlies previously when they've played some of the top teams in the world and they haven't necessarily played very well. It's not about who's been lining up, but they haven't played very well. And the reality is that good teams don't play very well all the time. This is a Brazil team who are ready to go and impress. They want to market. They want to be brand Brazil again around the world. It's very important to them they do it in the US. And they really came to play at Foxborough last night.
That's why, Dave, even as I sit here and pod this morning, I feel like I've woken up after being beaten up in a bar fight by someone who is wielding a baseball bat. I feel bruised.
Yeah.
I feel achy. I feel deeply, deeply terrified. Mostly, Dave, because Jurgen was asked ahead of the game what he wanted his team to demonstrate. Monica Gonzalez asked him the question, and he just said, I want my team to demonstrate their personality. The personality they showed last night, Dave, can only be described as very, very Toby Flenderson. From the off, I mean, Brazil started fast again, befuddling the US with their, I mean, just in capital letters, their ideas.
Yeah.
Luis Gustavo, Douglas Costa were both salivating. I mean, the highlight from a US perspective was Josie again, so up for it for the first 10 minutes. He nutmegged David Luiz or performed the contractually obliged nutmeg of David Luiz very, very early. But then the US, whenever they had the ball, sloppy in possession and one misplaced pass from Yedlin set up Willian to go galloping. Wow, Dave, you must have loved the Willian performance.
I kept on checking the internet to make sure that was actually the same Willian who plays, let's face it, fairly average Premier League football, maybe just above average Premier League football for Chelsea on a weekly basis. He looked like a star international player, like one of the best. He was keeping up Neymar out of the side in the first half for good reason. He was fantastic in this game, Rog.
Yeah, I mean, Norwich City scouts surely took note about how good he looks in yellow, mate. That's all I'm saying.
Good point.
I mean, he blew...
He could go to Watford, he could play at Bournemouth.
He blew past Bedoya, ignored Tim Ream, clipped the ball across the box. It clipped the post with poor Brad Guzan, totally stranded. And the ball bounced to Hulk with his oddly welded on haircut. And he shimmied Yedlin off his feet and smashed it past poor Brad Guzan, Dave. Oh, feel for that man. I really do feel for, but he's waited for so long for a girl like you to come into his life. And then this. I mean, the US tried to counter with their speed, Zardes and Yedlin moving the ball forward. But when Brazil were in possession, Dave, all I smelt was American fear. I've been working on a film about Crystal Palace, and I read an interview with one of their owners, Steve Parrish, and he took the club over in 2010 when it was near bankruptcy, and it was just yo-yoing constantly between the Premier League and the Championship. And he said, we talk a lot at Palace about changing the reality for the supporter. It's not just money, we realise, it's all about psychology. Look at Atletico Madrid, he said. They brought a psychology, which is why should we lose to Real Madrid? Because you say we should. It's 11 versus 11. We can win the league. And he said it's difficult, but it's not just the money. It's all about mentality football. You go to Stamford Bridge to get beat. We always used to go to Stamford Bridge and expect to get beat, but with modern thinking, that can change. The US played like a team, Dave O'Hare, that expected to get beat and was terrified of Brazil every time they got the ball.
I think also, Rog, in international football, even though we're seeing in the Premier League some teams starting to play a lot more on the counter and have some success by ceding position and playing on the counter, in international football, it's very tough to go game after game after game against the top teams in the world and cede possession. And especially when you cede possession in midfield to a team like Brazil with all of that individual ball skill, just very, very hard to go and do that again and again and think that you're going to nick results with about, 27, 28 possession and a half.
I mean, they changed it up in the first half. Bedoya, poor Bedoya, given the hook on 35 minutes, embarrassing for him. But he'd been asked to play a defensive midfield role. He doesn't play. He's not fully fit. Danny Williams came in and ESPN's Doug McIntyre tweeted Bedoya's quote after the game. I've never really played that position before as a professional. The US limped into halftime like a listing oil tanker. I realise Jurgen walked to the locker room, locked in a tactical conversation with Bertie Vokes. But the tactical battle was already lost, Davo. You can't wear a grey-blue shirt with denim collars and a grey undershirt. Wrong, wrong, wrong. And so even as I tried to think positive thoughts, Dave, about the second half, Brazil would sub on Neymar and Firmino, but the US are going to bring on Jordan Morris, Stanford Messi and Bobby Wood. But it wasn't any different, Dave. It was worse.
Yeah, I mean, and I'm torn on the tactical question. Obviously, a lot of criticism coming in for Jurgen Klinsmann that he didn't prepare his team in the right way, or he's playing players out of position, or you know, he's not set up in the right formation to go and dominate midfield. Should only be playing three in the back to go and, create more of a challenge in midfield, stop Brazil getting so much possession. But it's just hard to see when every single one of those Brazilian players have more individual skill at their feet. The Brazilian players are playing out of position all over the field and don't seem to have a problem with it. He's just, against that team when they're playing well, you just cannot sometimes find a solution that would have made that result any different.
Oh, they played so well. David Luiz found Neymar with that pass, which was like...
That pass.
I was chatting to JW about what that pass was like. He said it was like watching Eli Manning find Mario Manningham in Super Bowl 46.
Yeah.
The penalty, Brad Guzan got close enough to the penalty to make it seem like his fault he didn't save it. Very quickly, it seemed like Ian Dart was saying the US are almost battling for respectability. God, it was good to hear his voice. And then Josie got the hook, which made a mockery of my pre-game prediction that in 9 months' time, thousands of Brazilian babies would be named Josie or Josie or Josinho or Jojo Joe or even Altidora for the girls because of tonight's game. At the Russian Cycle said...
Maybe if irony is spreading hugely in Brazil, there could be a lot of Josies.
At the Russian Cycle tweeted us to say maybe the Josies of Brazil will face off in the 2037 Copa America with all the Mexican babies named after Graham Zuzi. The game just continued to unravel. Rafinha humiliated Tim Ream with a flick and a flare reminiscent of Brazil 1970. Neymar strolled through the gut of the defence to roll the ball home. It was as if Brazil were determined to humiliate Brad Guzan and do Tim Howard a solid, Davo. This was a kind of, in the second half, it was a kind of bedraggled American performance I always imagine when I picture how the US team semi-pro teams would have played in the late 1980s when they took on all comers.
Yeah, but the thing that ultimately, I said I was torn on the tactical stuff. I think the thing that ultimately really bothered me at the end of the game, thinking about it, was, it's not the first time we've seen the US beaten by a really good side. There are a lot of teams in the world who are going to be beaten by Brazil. Brazil are going to beat a lot of teams with their trickery. I think the thing that I found most remarkable watching the game is seeing how often one-on-one and sometimes, frankly, one-on-two, one-on-three, the U.S. were beaten by speed, and particularly towards the middle of that second half, towards the end of the game, beaten by speed. The U.S. teams, in terms of their fitness, in terms of their speed, have always measured up positively against every team in the world, including Brazil. And that was the thing I found most shocking.
It wasn't just speed, though, David. It was tactical naivety. I mean, the second half was so poor, and the positioning and the spaces they allowed Brazil to exploit. And Brazil, credit them. There was a glut of young talent on display. So credit Brazil absolutely and completely. They took advantage of everything we gave them. But I began to think maybe soccer truly is an ethnic sport for girls in schools here, David.
Maybe
Jurgen Klinsmann's big mistake was not to play more ethnic schoolgirls. But from a US perspective, M.W. von Walter tweeted us to say, is this just a strange Civil War-esque reenactment of Germany versus Brazil at the World Cup, but with Brazil playing the German role? I don't think it was, but I do believe the Brazilians must have heard all the German accents on the US team and just been like, revenge! Because this was, I mean, in this one, David, Brazil were from Serena, the US were from Venus.
I do think that, though, these kind of losses can be very, very important. They can be huge turning points. Obviously, there are massive rumours about, you know, Klinsmann's relationship with the dressing room right now, relationship with a number of his players. I don't mean so much a turning point in terms of Klinsmann's future, but in terms of the way that the US see how deep and how total the improvement has to be for them to go and compete with the best teams in the world, Rob.
Yeah, I'd say, I mean, the wonderful Paul Carr tweeted that the final score, 4-1, was the worst home loss for the US since May 2012, also a 4-1 loss against Brazil. I'd say these matches are set way before we actually know the context in which they'll be played. But lining up a game, a money-making game, hopefully, against Brazil, it's pretty reckless knowing that there could just have been, and there is going to be, a playoff for the Confederations Cup against Mexico looming. And we always say, what's our one rule in life, Dave?
We do not read too much into international friendlies.
But this was a woeful performance in every facet of play. I mean, especially tactically, it was hard to ignore. And it actually haunted me, Dave, just how shell-shocked the US players looked at the final whistle. This didn't feel like it was just a friendly loss to them. I hope it was all, I keep telling myself, maybe it was all just some elaborate rope-a-dope for the Mexico game. God, I hope so, because Mexico looked fantastic for large spells against Argentina in Dallas before they went full-on Spursy and ceded a two-goal lead in the dying minutes. I just think the oddest thing that I can't get my head around is this US team, they need stability right now to regain their confidence. And that's why I don't understand. There's just so much avant-garde experimentation, which reinforces the sense of uncertainty swirling around the team. Jurgen keeps talking about how his biggest problem is striker. But you look at the overall of the team and there's question marks everywhere. I mean, this is a US team with a silent quarterback controversy at goalkeeper. The back line's still a carousel. Michael Orozco and Ventura Alvarado together at centre-back. Even Ann Coulter knows, David. That is a big, big no-no. The midfield, I mean, we're the only two people who've not been given a call up there. I mean, how do they get the best out of Michael Bradley? Can Jermaine Jones impose himself consistently? With a Bedoya, Yedlin, Mick, Zardes, Kyle Beckham and five. The strikers, I mean, Josie can run riot against CONCACAF minnows. Anyone with an and in their team name, pretty well. As a rule of thumb, he will get goals. Against more capable opponents, the question marks remain. We still have no heir apparent to Landon and the ageing Klimt. It's CONCACAF Thunder time, David.
Absolutely. How important is the game against Mexico, Rog? Because I struggle to think that the Confederations Cup is incredibly important. However, I know that every US game against Mexico is very important. Yeah.
I mean, this is the biggest game on American turf in a long, long time, mostly because we don't have many important games on home turf. And the Confederations Cup, if you look at it, very few teams that have done well in it have then gone and done well in the World Cup. But we have so few markers. We don't have the Euros that allow a refocusing of kind of like a bellwether of where this team is. And in the absence of that bellwether, I think the Confederations Cup and qualifying automatically out of CONCACAF, and now particularly this arch rival clash showdown in LA, which is going to be incredibly hospitable for the Mexican team. Even though they're on the road, they'll be very much a home team. The American Outlaws will be there in force. But I think it's been seen very much as a threshold game in terms of the judgment. Talk about CONCACAF Thunder, Davo. Some pretty fascinating other results in CONCACAF World Cup qualifying. Jamaica 2, Nicaragua 3. Jamaica ultimately qualified via a late spectacular volley 1 minute from full time to get through 2-0 last night. But I was speaking to a friend of mine from Kingston over the weekend, and he told me that there's so many English-born players on the Jamaica team that when they lose, the Jamaican fans just give the whole team the Andy Murray treatment. When he wins, the English papers proclaim his Britishness. When he loses, he's never more Scottish. He's the Scottish tennis player, Andy Murray. So with the reggae boys, when they win, they are 100% Jamaican. When they lose, especially to Nicaragua at home, they couldn't be more English.
And I think St. Vincent and the Grenadines, beat Aruba to go into the US's group in the last round of pre-qualifying for the Hex.
I love St. Vincent. She's a fantastic footballer. She's actually a fantastic footballer. There's an amazing video online of St. Vincent doing him keep you up. She is a freestyle phenomenon. So if they could, they probably should play St. Vincent, the singer, and the Grenadines, her backing band. I'd go and watch that. I'd pay to watch that. Go on.
Rog, you mentioned the Euros earlier, and England remained perfect in Euro 2016 qualifying. Punched their ticket for France after beating Switzerland 2-0 Tuesday and mighty San Marino 6-0 on Saturday. The biggest story of the games, absolutely, was Wayne Rooney notching his 49th against San Marino and his 50th international goals against Switzerland in those games, passing to Bobby Charlton as England's all-time leading scorer.
Fantastic performance, Dave. Crushing San Marino. A team whose form record reads 4 L's and a D, and then I think 57 L's. The one draw against Estonia in 2014, which they celebrated as if they'd won the World Cup. The team's nickname is La Serenissima, the Serene Ones, for God's sake. So let's say well done, England, for qualifying so early. It's peak England to qualify among the first to qualify for the Euros. They'll be eliminated first two, so their fans have to wait the longest for the tournament to come around, for it to be savoured briefly before the flame of competition is weakly snuffed. But let's talk about Wayne, David.
Yeah, England are excellent at qualifying. Nobody's ever had a problem with their ability to qualify, except when they're managed by Steve McLaren. Rooney, 50 goals, 49 equals to Bobby Charlton, one of his heroes, incidentally. 50th goal surpassed it. It's taken him quite a long time to go and do it, and yet it is a remarkable achievement. The big knock on Rooney is that other than Euro 2004, and I think one goal he had at the World Cup last year, Rog, he has not scored those goals at major tournaments. He's never lit up a major tournament, really, Rog. However, the vast majority of the goals were in competitive fixtures, not in friendlies. Only six of them were penalties, despite the last two being penalties, Rog. A pretty remarkable performance for his country.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's an amazing feat, especially in international football, where it's a sign his achievement of both longitude and an ability to score regularly in a game, international level football. The defences are probably organised well by the managers, but the attacking end is often not as sharp as the club teams, because the teams ultimately are really just all-star teams. But overall, to me, Dave, it was impressive as Queen Elizabeth II officially becoming the longest reigning monarch ever, surpassing Queen Victoria. Queen Victoria did it when we still had an empire, so I think it matters more. And in this equation, Bobby Charlton, 100% Queen Victoria. Rooney's feat is undermined by the fact that so few came in top tournament, so few were ultimately deeply consequential. But also, Dave, even more, two things. Number one, the English national team themselves diminished as a beloved national institution during his tenure. Bobby Charlton won the World Cup. Gary Lineker led us to a semi-final, made us believe. In Rooney's time, England became overhyped, plain old crap. I think context is as important as action. It's hard to be a national hero in a time of decline. And that sense is reinforced, I mean, what you said, by the unfulfilled expectation that's haunted him and the promise that never was fulfilled at the international level. You remember 2004 when he broke through. 17 years, 111 days, he came on for England, then the youngest player ever to wear the England shirt, a 3-1 friendly loss to Australia. David Beckham, captain team. He led them into Euro 2004. Right before it, I remember, he had what the English press called an unsavoury nightclub incident in which he was alleged to have spat in a female clubber's face. And I think The Guardian prophetically called him a snarling ball of aggression, too wild for some tastes, but a force impossible to ignore. Do you remember what he was like in that tournament? It was like watching a boy turn into a man.
I remember one of the qualification games that they had to play against Turkey. I don't know whether it's for the Euros or for the World Cup. I just remember Rooney bossing that game all over the park. He was like a bully. He had more skill. He had better in the tackle, better in possession, better at passing, better vision, every single part of that game. And we just saw too little of that on the world stage. Having said that, what I love about Rooney, what I still love about him, Rog, is I think he's the last of the street footballers, the kids who grew up playing football in the street, that we'll ever see wearing an England shirt. I think he's the last of a genre, and he still has that fight. He still has that passion to compete. How often have we said, and we've done Men in Blazers, we've reviewed the Premier League weekend, that once again Wayne Rooney was Manchester United's best player. And I do think that he's not been as great as people expected him to be, but he's still been the best footballer of his generation. But
I will never forget the game when he came alive, the 3-0 victory against Switzerland in 2004. I think he came on and just a horrific studs first slide into the goalkeeper. He was yellow carded, I think within 15, 16 minutes. He then got a second warning from the referee for trying to fight the opposing striker in the centre circle. But within seconds, he refocused that manic energy, met a Michael Owen cross and just leapt between two defenders to nod the ball past a flat-footed goalkeeper. He then trotted calmly towards the corner flag and executed a celebratory cartwheel along the way. No small feat for such a thick-set gent, and something you would never see him do today. And his legend just grew so quickly, it snowballed. Then England coach Sven-Goran Eriksson unironically proclaimed, "I don't remember anyone making such an impact on the tournament since Pelé in the 1958 World Cup." And then in the quarterfinal, he chased down a routine long ball only to pull up lame after a slight clip from a Portuguese defender. He limped off with a broken foot. England never had a chance without him. And he's never been the same again, Davo. He's never, for all of his goals, he's never been the same again.
I mean, perhaps this is a symptom of my renewed sense of pessimism about the England team, Rog.
Or perhaps
controlling expectations. But I do think that the thing I'm most encouraged by about England is they've reverted to what has made them an above-average European side for most of my lifetime, and that is building a really, really strong back four in front of, I can't believe I'm saying this, a solid goalkeeper in Joe Hart. I think there is a great hope for Chris Smalling, the improvement that young man has made, who's come in for so much criticism. Klein, who looks great at right back. Luke Shaw, who was sparkling at left back. I think England have a back five that they can at least go into tournaments not thinking they're going to blow it all at the back. And that might be England's best hope of advancing, not all the way, but advancing into the, you know, maybe last eight. Is that asking too much for England at the Euros?
Nah, David, it's not. Yes, it is. Yes, it is. But you keep believing it. Look, at one last tribute to Rooney. In honour of him, I refound one of my favourite ever Rooney interviews with FHM magazine, where they said to him in a short Q&A, "Will we see you experimenting with any daft haircuts?" And Rooney said, "No, I don't think you'll ever see that. I'm going to keep it just the same." And they pressed the point, Davo. They said, "Not a mullet. What if the 70s footballer perm comes back into fashion?" And he said, "I don't think so. I think I'll just stay with me hair now," which they spell M-E, me hair now, Davo. And he's kept his word. He's kept
his word. He just has a somewhat liberal definition of me hair.
He's kept it.
It can come from anyone. In other Euro 2016 qualifying news, Rob, Scotland's hopes took a hit as they lost to Georgia 1-0 away, and Germany 3-2 at home. They now sit in fourth place in Group D, 4 points behind the Republic of Ireland with two left to play. The top two teams in each group automatically qualify. Most third-place teams face a playoff. I love the greatest humiliation for Scotland on the way back from Georgia is their plane was delayed and all the players had to eat at Burger King, Rog, which is an uptick in their regular nutrition. And meanwhile, Northern Ireland are just 2 points from playing in their first major championship since 1986. Norwich striker Kyle Lafferty latched onto a loose ball in the 93rd minute to earn a crucial 1-1 draw over third-place Hungary at Windsor Park in Belfast over the weekend. And the champagne remains on ice in Wales after a 0-0 draw with Israel. Oh, that was a dull game, Rog. Wales need just 1 point in their remaining two games against Bosnia-Herzegovina away and Andorra at home to qualify for their first major tournament since 1958.
The magical moment of the week, Davo. Gareth Bale's late 82nd-minute header that locked up the points against Cyprus put Wales on the brink. He ran to the bench, charged towards the coaching staff. The whole squad then jumped on him. You think about how Ronaldo would have reacted if he'd scored such a crucial goal for Portugal or Ibra for Sweden. And I think you get a measure of the man.
Top knots are in, Rog. While the Welsh wait, the celebrations are in full swing in Iceland. My guess is those are really, really fun celebrations. They beat the Netherlands 1-0 last Thursday and then drew 0-0 with Kazakhstan over the weekend to secure their place in France. With a population of about 330,000, Rog, Iceland is the smallest nation to ever qualify for a European Championship.
I found this fascinating. I have to say, well played to the Strakanieuka, which I believe translates roughly to our boys. Vice Sports heralded you as the best pound-for-pound football team in the world. Their population is even smaller than Wyoming, just for point of comparison, which has a population of 563,000. So Euro 2016 qualification comes after getting so close to the last World Cup. They lost in a playoff against Croatia. They got a great squad led by Sigurdsson of Swansea City, who's led the team with 5 goals in qualifying. And what I find fascinating about the story, I'm always trying to think about the American ramifications. I mean, the Icelandic boom is a planned product of creative thinking. I mean, the weather in Iceland used to mean football could only be played for 4 or 5 months a year. But once Ida Gudjonsson started to play for Chelsea, the sport's popularity rocketed. They started to build indoor pitches across the island. Huge investment made on artificial fields, outdoor, indoor fields at every school. And more importantly, probably a massive number of UEFA licensed coaches were trained, over 700, which again, coaching so important, per capita outstrips even Spain and Germany. And if you couple that with the Icelandic mindset, they're rugged survivors willing to test themselves abroad. They've created a flood of technically gifted young footballing warriors. And you look at the Iceland project, you've got to think how few truly world-class footballers America has birthed. And you have to wonder, are we almost too big a nation, Davo, to build a cogent system? Is the size of this country working against us? I just don't understand, and I never will right now, why a big American brand, why a McDonald's or a Burger King, I know the Burger King are very tied into the Scottish team right now.
Yeah, they are.
Why they don't step in and do this in the United States, just own the putting of facilities in urban settings, investing in coaching, own the status of taking US football to the next level. But well done, Iceland. Lars Lagerbäck, the manager, political pollsters revealed he could win right now an election for president of the country. And he said, typical Icelandically modest, he said, I wouldn't say I'm a hero. Martin Luther King, Nelson Mandela, people like that, they're the real heroes.
For every hero, you need anti-heroes, Rog. We mentioned Iceland's 1-0 defeat of the Netherlands, and the Aranje followed that with a 3-0 loss to Turkey over the weekend. World Cup semi-finalists, Rog, from last year, within a whisker of actually qualifying, making it to the final, now sit in fourth place in Group A, are in very real danger of failing to qualify. What is going on in the lowlands, Rog?
Oh, by the way, this made me feel better about life, David. They were a penalty shootout away from the World Cup final. Yeah. The headlines in the Dutch newspaper that you and I both subscribe to, Algemeen Dagblad.
They had
a photograph of Robin van Persie lying on the turf and the headline, We Don't Count Anymore, which I guess is We Don't Matter Anymore. Brutal. Trumped at home by Iceland, then violated by Arda Turan and Turkey 3-0 in Konya. They're out of the qualification slots behind Iceland, Czech Republic and Turkey. They now need wins in their last two games against Kazakhstan and the Czech Republic. Only Andorra, Gibraltar, Malta and San Marino have been behind for more minutes than Holland. I think it's a story of two layers of talent not gelling. You've got the ageing, oft-injured superstars, Robin van Persie, Iron Robin, Wesley Schneider. Stars for so long, Davo, all the wrong side of 30. Kind of Clint Dempsey style. You've got the young, raw prospects. Loads of talent coming up through the ranks. We all know Memphis. So much of the squad are under the age of 24, but there's almost nothing in between, which includes powerhouse midfielder Kevin Strootman, who's been out with an injury. And I guess there's a sense that the World Cup ultimately was just a massive overachievement and a power vacuum left behind by Louis van Gaal's martial leadership, which Goose Hiddink and his friendly man management could not fill. And now Danny Blind, the dad of Daly, has lost his first two games at the helm. It's very hard to replace Darth Vader, David.
Yeah, definitely. It definitely is. Darth Vader will be back, Rog, as the Premier League returns in some style this weekend with several big fixtures. None of them bigger, though, Rog, than Man United versus Liverpool. One of the most storied fixtures in the history of the Premier League. Both teams coming off their first losses of the season, and both, to be honest, yet to truly convince.
The Anthony Marshall era begins in earnest.
Yep.
Will football ever be the same again?
Yeah, I'm not sure.
So this game was a blockbuster in the 90s and the early 2000s. It was the best the Premier League could serve up. When you speak to John Henry and Tom Werner, they talk about the numbers that they saw globally watching this game. And they saw that it was guaranteed for two regular season games a season. It's what drew them to the club. But now both of these teams, low on confidence, less buccaneering, more hanging on to hope. They're an echo of what the fixture once offered. For United fans, Sergio Romero's stranglehold on the number one goalkeeper slot is going to be under ever-increasing scrutiny. Now David De Gea is hanging around. He said, playing for United is a dream, and if God helps me, this dream will never end.
I'm fascinated to watch this game this weekend, Rog, to see which Man United team shows up, which Liverpool team shows up. And I think this could be a significant game for both teams and set them up for a second-place charge for the rest of the season, because I'm not sure anybody's going to catch Man City. The other huge game, certainly for you and me, Rog, it's El Blazerico, Chelsea versus Everton. And I got to say, I can't believe I'm saying this, Rog, not in the face.
Oh, I've got to tell you, Dave, I expect to be upset come the final whistle. I really do. I was trying to think about how I could capture the upset I'm braced for. And there's a great tweet by @ParfitTom who tweeted a stat about road rage in Russia. He said, Moscow's head traffic cop claims 500,000 baseball bats have been sold in Russia in the past year, but just two gloves and only one baseball. That's how angry that's how angry I expect to be come the final whistle.
Yeah, well, talking of baseball bats and road rage, I guess one of my concerns about this game is that Chelsea are going to be so fired up to get back and to go and win points, so fired up by one hope, by their home crowd, to go and get a result here. The Everton fans, no doubt, are going to be taunting, singing their John Stones song, taunting the Chelsea fans. They always have a great away showing at Stamford Bridge. And I just worry that Chelsea are going to get over reckless. I can feel a Kurt Zouma red card, like, coming for all the way from South Carolina.
Oh, I love that feeling. The foretelling of a Kurt Zouma red card, it feels that feeling when you jam your finger into your belly button. It's very exciting. I will say, I feel like I've seen this game before. It will be Everton valiant, Chelsea in the game most definitely. Everton struggling, but a very late, slightly dodgy Willian, probably deflected goal past a completely wrong-footed, but not to blame Tim Howard, Davo. That's what I feel this game will go, 1-0. I will have valiant loss, which means everything and nothing.
I think Willian's going to be very jet-lagged, Rog. Arsenal versus Stoke. Sexy, sexy Stoke. Arsenal still yet to hit their stride, and sexy, sexy Stoke struggling mightily all of a sudden, Rog. They've just got 2 points from their 4 games.
Yeah, Arsenal, they're bete noir Stoke, and they'll be facing him without Danny Welbeck, who has undergone surgery and will be out, according to the club, for, quote, a period of months. Further thinning of the striker stock at Arsenal Football Club. Even worse news for true Arsenal fans, Meek Mill wore the club's away jersey when he bounced onto stage at the Made in America Fest.
Huh.
Turns out he did it because he's sponsored by Puma. And probably a bigger fan of nipple chafing than of Santi Cazorla. But it caused many of our GFOP Arsenal fans to believe that the club are truly doomed. @HumanPackAnimal countered by saying, Meek Mill, that's nothing. Osama Bin Laden, Chris Christie, Piers Morgan, we've had worse fans. That's all I'm saying.
Yeah, very true, Rog. And you're going to be at a game this weekend, Rog, a top-of-the-table clash. Crystal Palace versus Manchester City. Are you sitting with Kayla the Eagle?
Oh, I'm going to be filming with Kayla the Eagle and the Crystals. And Steve Parrish, one of the owners, and Alan Pardew, to get a grip on the remarkable Crystal Palace story. 2010 team on the brink of financial collapse and now kind of bolstered, and a real litmus test of whether it's possible to have a new egalitarianism in the Premier League, and about whether it can take hold for more than just 4 games. It's a great story. They've strategically grown a fascinating brand and built it around the notion of South London, Davo, and their incredible fan base there. I can't wait to dig in. Maybe the curse of Rodge will impact Manchester City by mistake.
Oh, that would be amazing. Yeah, South London Rodge. Will this be called Together Anything Is Possible Too? that would be great. Okay, Rodge. And in an MLS, Didier Drogba.
Talking about anything is possible.
He gets a hat-trick in his first start for the Montreal Impact to lead the team to, he's about 74 now, Rog, to a 4-3 win over Chicago. Oh, no, he's 37. The 37-year-old former Chelsea man who came on as a sub 2 weeks ago is the first MLS player to ever score a hat-trick in his first two matches.
Right foot, left foot and a header. It was a natural hat-trick too. Magic. And a great article I loved on the Chelsea website. The Chelsea fans shipped over a little piece of Stamford Bridge to Montreal. They sent over the Drogba legend banner. You may remember the orange Drogba legend banner, which has adorned Stamford Bridge since 2012. They've loaned it, Davo, to the Montreal Impact so that he can kind of really connect the fans between the two clubs.
That's a good idea.
You can get the Columbus Crew might get the Captain Leader legend banner when they when they sign my mate JT.
And in more MLS news, Rog, according to Commissioner Don Garber, they're in talks with the Premier League about setting up an Anglo-American Cup. Oh, I love it. It's the special relationship, Rog. While speaking at a conference in Manchester Wednesday, Garber said, quote, "I would love to find a way that we could play our Cup champion and our League champion against an FA Cup and Premier League champion in a tournament and play it in New York City every year." That's a good idea.
I'd love it even more if Liga MX were involved, Davo. That would be unbelievable for the fan base here. At Mitch from Ohio tweeted us to say it should be called the Revolutionary Cup, and after each year, whichever team wins decides whether it's soccer or football for the next year. High stakes.
Well, the problem is, if they're playing it in New York City, I have to assume that that would be at Yankee Stadium, which isn't a version of football that I really understand anyway, Rog, on that rhombus that they play on over there.
One other piece of MLS business. Big mazel tov to Josh Lambeau, former MLS 2008 first-round draft pick and a goalkeeper for FC Dallas for four seasons, who's just become the San Diego Chargers kicker for the season ahead. Harry Kane, take note, he beat out the incumbent Nick Novak by blasting a 53-yard field goal in preseason. Coach Mike McAvoy said, "The game is not too big for Josh. He never flinched. I'm thrilled for Lambeau and his family, many of whom are GFOPs. He jumped on the pod last year to talk about life as an Aggie. He's a real mensch. We look forward to rooting for him for this entire season."
Okay, on to the Ravens. Our first Raven is from Bill Darnell, Rog. "As much as I've grown to love what I once called soccer, but now lovingly call football, it has presented a difficult identity crisis for me. The influence of England and its great sport is having a weird effect on me. I found myself using sports lingo similar to what I hear from the gracious lips of Rebecca Lowe and say things like, 'England are going to win,' rather than 'England is going to win.' I say pitch instead of field, nil instead of zero, and my once awful imitation of an English accent is becoming slightly more passable. A few years ago, I didn't know there was a difference between British and English, but now I can point out each country on a map and know which part of the Union Jack they represent. As American football season approaches, what used to be a crescendo of adrenaline as 22 men took to the gridiron to pound each other for 3 hours has become a boring chore in which I only occasionally interest myself. Conversely, I will wake up at 7:45 a.m. to watch all the glory of football the way it was meant to be played in a faraway country I've never visited, but now holds very closely to my heart. As time marches on, I wonder what this will mean for me with my countrymen. Am I becoming a Benedict Arnold by abandoning my nation's sports? Will I become so English in my heart that I start to take sad naps after a grueling loss like Rog? Will my sports hatred for teams like Man United, Arsenal, Liverpool turn into real hate like it seems so many I have seen during the game? Although I can trace absolutely no English ancestry in my roots, I find myself increasingly in love with your fair mother country. The more I fall in love with England football and my beloved Manchester City Football Club, the less I care about the consequences. Is this okay in common with other listeners, or am I on dangerous ground? I'm acutely aware you two seem to have the same problem, and I'm hoping for some guidance."
Where's it all going, David?
Great Raven, Robbie.
Where is it all going? I do wonder about this, because we got a lot of emails this week when college football came back onto our screens this weekend, when there wasn't any English Premier League football. And a lot of GFOP said, that its arrival only made them miss English Premier League weekends all the more. I've always assumed English soccer was largely complementary and that it didn't replace American sports fandom. I mean, I still follow NFL and the NBA.
Yeah, I feel like the two have to exist in harmony with each other. I mean, I guess I do have a view. It's all football and it's all sport. And I love all football and I love all sport. I actually find the Premier League a little bit easier than other sports, you know, quite apart from the fact that we have this Men in Blazers thing going on, Rog. It's almost easier to follow because of the times it's on. It's just very easy to get into, and the newspaper coverage is just so good, Rog, and social media covers it so well. But I am starting to figure out that there is something of an identity crisis amongst many English Premier League fans in the US, that they are worried that they are becoming too English. I heard a radio host on SiriusXM the other day, Rog, decry how American fans are trying to behave in too English a way at games by singing songs in the English style or affecting sort of, you know, the sort of traits of hooligans or what they think of as hooligans are being. And he was encouraging American followers of the sport to adopt traditions that come from other American sports like basketball or American football or college football and take those to MLS games and US men's national team games. So I think that this conversation is out there. I just think you've just got to embrace it and go with it and just naturally go on your journey. Go on your journey, Bill. Ride.
Don't become English, though, Bill. We lost the empire. It ends badly. I can tell you, I've read the end of that book. I know how it ends. I will say, the sheer volume of football I have to watch right now has edged out one sport in my life, and I feel very sad about it, and I want to reclaim it. Major League Baseball. I used to watch a lot. I haven't been to a game this season. I've not been to see the Mets this season because I had to watch so much football over the summer. And now they're doing so well, I'm scared to go in case I curse them, Dave, and then it will all be my fault. But Bill, get a sense of yourself. Get a grip on yourself. I sentence you to a trip to Hooters. John Gruden style, you'll soon regain a sense of your true self.
Rog, by the way, also, any American, anyone in the world who loves sport and appreciates great athletes, stay tuned to the US Open for the rest of this week. You mentioned earlier Serena out Williams. Venus, Rog, she's into the semi-finals. We might be seeing a great achievement this weekend, a Grand Slam.
She's like the Andre Ayew to Venus's Jordan.
Oh, Venus deserves more than that, Rog. Venus deserves more than that, Rog. Okay, the winner of the coveted Guinness Men in Blazers Poet, Philosopher, Sucker, Scribe, Raven of the Week is Josh Polak of Amherst, Massachusetts. Josh writes in regards to last week's Raven of the Week, which came to us from Phoenix's Nick Kelly. Nick is a father of three girls and has a boy on the way. He wants to give his son a great footballing name and asked us for help. We passed the buck and asked for GFOP suggestions. We promised two BlazerCon passes for our favourite and patches for the runners-up. While Josh isn't the contest winner, we'll announce those in just a second. We love this Raven. Josh writes, "As a proud GFOP and even prouder father of three badass, soccer-loving daughters, I was quite disappointed to hear that a fellow GFOP would describe himself as having been cursed with three girls." So many questions were raised by Nick Kelly's Raven. Why is only the son to be named after a footballer? How can this man's daughters be saved from being viewed as a curse? How can this man's son be saved from viewing his sisters and all other girls, or as my son George says, grills, as a curse? But we have a chance for redemption by naming this man's son. And since we know from soccer that names are destiny, for example, how great would Ronaldo be if he were not named after Ronald Reagan? And how much greater would Algero Elia be if he were not named after Algero? The name we choose will save the entire Kelly family from this curse that Nick believes has befallen them. The answer is clear. The son must be named after a great footballer of the women's game. I'm tempted to suggest that he be named after my favourite footballer of all time, the great Michelle Akers. But I'll admit, Akers is a bit of a peculiar first name. I kind of like the idea of Martha Kelly. Or how about Angra Kelly? My non-curse-providing daughters wear numbers 13 and 15 when playing soccer, chosen for their favourite footballers, GFOP's Alex Morgan and Megan Rapinoe. Rapinoe Kelly would be awesome, and Morgan Kelly could work as well. But the boy is to be born in 2015, and since this summer, we now know that if you want your child, boy or girl, to be a badass, non-cursed lover of the beautiful game, and if you want your child to have any hope to grow up to score a first-half hat-trick in a World Cup final, then there is only one namesake. GFOP's, a son is born, and he shall be named Lloyd Kelly. Good name, Rog, Lloyd Kelly.
It's like Lloyd Braun.
Oh, my God, yeah, great GFOP, Lloyd Braun. Don't grow up like Lloyd Braun, grow up like Carly Lloyd.
Who won, Dave?
These are the GFOP baby name contest winners. The second runner-up, Rog, or third, as we say in England, Jonathan Joseph Kelly, nicknamed John Joe Kelly, suggested by Stephen Shade, a patch on its way to you.
You can't go wrong with John Joe.
You're right. The first runner-up also receives a patch. 11 Jack Quarterback Kelly, suggested by Dylan Fisher. And the winner, and this really was brilliant, so creative, so funny, is Mario Ballo Kelly from Daniel Waldron. Mario's the first name. Ballo is the second name, Kelly. Mario Ballo Kelly.
B-A-L-O.
Daniel, yeah, B-A-L-O. Mario Ballo Kelly. That's from Daniel Waldron. Daniel, two passes for BlazerCon on their way to you. We can't wait to meet you. Brooklyn, November 13th, November 14th.
And mazel tov to baby Lloyd Kelly, too.
Yeah, absolutely. The EA Sports FIFA cover contest, Rob, we're announcing this today. EA Sports FIFA 16 is released September the 22nd.
Oh, my nipples are tingling.
It's an event we celebrate religiously every year. But this year is made even more special by the game's inclusion of our favourite women's players, including the World Cup champion US national team. The cover features Alex Morgan alongside Lionel Messi, and it is brilliant. But we want you to look into the future. Have a bite of pie and design your best FIFA 17 cover. Send us your entries via email or on social media using the hashtag MIBFIFAcover. We have EA Sports FIFA 16 Limited Edition Men in Blazers packs to give away to our 10 favorite entries. We'll post some of last year's winners from GFOP's Marshall Jesse as an example.
I look forward to this competition. It is one of my favorite of the year.
Okay, Rog, your weekend looks like this, courtesy of Mini USA. Getting faster, Rog, every single week. Everton versus Chelsea, El Blazerico, Saturday, 7:45 a.m. Eastern on NBC Sports Network. It's so early, my entire weekend could be ruined, Rog. Crystal Palace versus Manchester City, Saturday at 10 a.m. on NBCSN. No offence. Manchester United versus Liverpool, Saturday at noon on the NBC Television Network, Rog. That's impressive. There are many ways to connect to us. One, Rog, is through our Amazon Emporium, which helps keep the show going. Anytime you go on Amazon, prices big or small, just click off the Emporium page, and Men in Blazers gets a tiny percentage that allows us to cover the cost of creating this podcast. Rog, what are you putting in the Emporium this week?
I'd like to, but I can't put in Narcos, which is so good on Netflix.
I know you're enjoying it, Rog.
It's the best television series I've seen since Being Liverpool, to which, when I tweeted it out, at Jaime for Life tweeted back, Brendan Rodgers would get caught if he was a drug dealer because he would keep talking to everyone about just how good he is at it. Dave-o, it's Rosh Hashanah fast upcoming. Time for reflection. Yeah. Time for an awareness of your own failings, which is a lot for me. Time for hypersensitivity to your own mortality, which we've already discussed at the top of this podcast. We're all going to die. I'm going to recommend a book I recommend every year at this time. It's one of my favourite books ever, written by a bloke I named one of my sons after. Oddly enough, my fourth son. Primo Levi, The Drowned and the Saved, the Italian, what a man. It's really a reflection on his own life as a partisan and a survivor at Auschwitz. And the second essay, The Grey Zone, it's one of the best things I have ever read. I read it every year at Rosh Hashanah and Yom Kippur. It talks of the human need for simplicity, our desperate desire to separate history into good and evil, winners and losers, black and white, good guys and bad guys. Dave-o, you know I'm guilty of that more than pretty well anyone you know. And he talks about how real life is ever more complicated and that most of it exists in a grey zone between the two.
And talking of the grey zone, Rog, and this will make sense in a second, you know what I've got heavily into down in South Carolina, Rog?
Go on.
Juicing, Rog. I've been juicing up a storm. And I'm putting in, this is the Willian in a Brazil shirt of all juicers, Rog. It is the Omega J8006 Nutrition Center juicer in black and chrome. It looks like it's steel grey, Rog. You know, I never understood what cold pressing was. You know, often when they make juices, they use heat to go and press the juices. That takes all the nutrients out, Rog. But cold pressing juices, cold pressing fruits and vegetables, keeps all the nutrients in. I've been feeling alive, so full of energy, getting back my everything, Rog, getting back my energy, getting back my chi, just living here on juices.
Devo, keen listeners will know, I think that is the second juicer you've recommended in about 5 weeks. Life for you is just an orgy of juices.
Yeah, I've got to apologise, actually, because the other one wasn't a juicer. But that's a magic bullet. And a magic bullet is useful. It's useful for many things, but it does not cold press juices. It just doesn't do everything that that the Amiga 8006 can go and do, Rog. So I apologise. If you bought a magic bullet, you might have to return that and go and upgrade to go and do the juicer. I'm sorry. People make mistakes.
How many shares do you own in this new juicer business?
I don't know, but I'm looking into it right after we get off the pod, Rog. Other ways to connect to us, obviously, our website. You can now watch entire episodes of our crack TV show on meninblazers.com. They're also available through NBC Sports, Live Extra, Apple TV, and Roku, Rog. Also on the website, meninblazers.com, a place to sign up for our newsletter, The Raven, which we produce with our partner Guinness. And check out our Spotify account, men_in_blazers. meninblazers.wikispaces.com, that's a wonder of the modern world. You can follow us on Twitter at Embassy Davies, at Roger Bennett, at meninblazers, on Instagram, at meninblazers, at embassy_Davies, and on Facebook. We've got a subreddit, meninblazers.reddit.com, that's maintained by GFOP's Akshay, Calvin, and Alex. You can always send your ravens to the crack part of Soho, and you can always email meninblazers@gmail.com.
Oh, we have a terribly crap television show too, David, which returns, I believe, this Monday at 11 p.m. Eastern Time on NBCSN, which is a lot of letters. It is a Rosh Hashanah special.
Starring my
rabbi, my own rabbi. I brought him onto the show. His name is Kyle Martino.
Yeah, very, very true, Rog. Vendor Punk, Rog.
War Pig.
Who wants to sex Matumbo?
Explosion.
Together. Anything is possible.
Take that, Gloria. No, it isn't.
Is that your analysis?
I would say seersucker up, but we're in between seasons, so I'll just say Happy New Year, / we're all going
to
die.
Yeah, cut to cord. Abrigado. Rock on, mate.
Kung Fu Fight in America. Love you, Davo.
Love you, Rog.
Love you, Marshy Vistas.
Oh, getting back to it right now.